Hi, folks. Doug McBurney here. Keeping Bob Enyart live on the radio is a labor of love that demands our attention every now and then. And now is that time, and he needs your help to stay on the radio for another year. Bob's presence on the mighty 50,000-watt KLT in Denver gives him the ability to promote godly ideas on the terrestrial airwaves. I'm asking you to call right now or go online to purchase any or all of Bob's eye-opening Christian resources available in written, audio, or video formats. Call 1-800-8-ENYART right now or go to kgov.com and come alongside Bob's vital ministry and keep Bob broadcasting for another year. That's 1-800-8-ENYART or go to kgov.com, kgov.com right now to give Bob the essential support that only you can offer.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. It's been a few years since my co-host, Fred Williams, presented our last update on the science of global warming. So I thought that for our update, we could review the open letter against the global warming hype written to Pope Francis and reported on recently in the Washington Post and really reported on everywhere. Written by the Cornwall Alliance and their founder, Calvin Beisner, and signed by more than 100 scholars and theologians. Now, I pulled a book from our studio library, you can hear it there, a good solid book, on global cooling, published in 1976. That's right, not on global warming, but it's called The Cooling, and the back cover carries an endorsement from Senator Pell of Pell Grant fame. And a scientist from NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, Dr. Schneider, he endorsed the book too. He was the deputy head of NCAR's climate project, and chapter 7 of the book is titled The Politics of Global Cooling. So they were alarmists calling for left-wing public policies, but that cooling thing didn't work out for them. So they continued to advocate for the same liberalism, but switched the panic to global warming. About human-caused increase in atmospheric carbon dioxide, which is dangerously warming the planet. That's the claim. So I Googled the name Calvin Beisner, one of the world's leading experts against global warming, in quotes, along with Pope Francis, in quotes, and Google found thousands of web pages that have both of their names all about global warming. I'd like to quote from this open letter where we read, that the debate is rooted in a clash of worldviews, with conflicting doctrines of God, creation, humanity, sin, and salvation. That clash often works its way into the very conclusions of environmental science. Rather than a careful reporting of the best evidence, we get highly speculative and theory-laden conclusions presented as the assured results of science. Science itself is diminished, and the very people we seek to help, often the poor, could be harmed instead. So, Real Science Radio's first question is this. Have those climate models been accurate? We have decades of data now to compare with the predictions of the climate models. So, is nature complying with the predictions of the climate experts? What do you think, Calvin?
Well, thank you very much for having me on the program first.
Well, you're very welcome, Calvin.
Yeah, we're glad to have an opportunity to share our views about this. And by the way, the number of endorsers for this letter has climbed to over 200 of actual climate science and climate policy economist experts, as well as theologians and philosophers.
Well,
because there are many different aspects to this controversy, you know,
sure.
Not just scientific.
But, and Calvin, they say that this is settled science. But here in Denver, we have a friend of Real Science Radio, Dr. Ed Holroyd. He got a degree in astrophysics, then a PhD in climate science, and he's worked for the government in the field. And he signed a petition project against the alarm over global warming. So the science can't be settled if so many scholars and scientists disagree.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think it might be good to just introduce this part of the discussion by quoting the late Richard Feynman. He was a Nobel Prize winning physicist. Mm. And he puts the point so well as to what real science is all about. He calls it the key to science. He says, we look for a new law, a new way of understanding how the world works by the following process. First, we guess it. Then we compute the consequences of the guess to see what would be implied if this law that we guessed is right. Then we compare the result of the computation to nature with experiment or experience, compare it directly with observation to see if it works. If it disagrees with experiment, it is wrong.
Wow.
And that simple statement, says Feynman, is the key to science. So what do? You know, you asked, are the models right? How do they fit the data? Well, that can be answered real briefly and simply. Of the roughly 120 or so global climate models that are depended on by the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and others who are worried about what they think is dangerous man-made global warming, of those, on average, they simulate twice as much warming as has actually been observed in the real world over the relevant period. Mm. 95% of them, plus, simulate more warming than has been observed. Now, if the errors in the models were random, we would find that their simulations would be as frequently above as below the observation.
Right.
But the fact that 95% are above shows that they are driven not by random chance errors, but by bias written right into the models themselves. And then finally, none of the models simulated the fact that for the last 17 to 27 years, depending on which database you look at, there has been no statistically significant global warming. The 18 and a half years, according to the satellite database, the satellite readings of global temperature, which are the most reliable, the most accurate. So in short, the guess and the predictions based on that guess disagree with observation. Therefore, it's wrong. The models are wrong. And if they're wrong, then they provide no rational basis for any predictions about future climate or for any policies designed to try to change future climate or try to prepare for it or anything else. There's
well, the
just
policies,
nothing left.
Calvin, the policies that are recommended tend to hurt the poor and the lower middle class significantly, whereas there are people who've become wildly wealthy through all the global warming politics.
Yeah, that's correct. The ones who have become wildly wealthy are basically those who are invested in corporations that produce solar panels, wind turbines, and parts of the energy industry that are related to those. And they've become wealthy not because those things are creating a whole lot of energy, generating energy at a price that consumers are glad to pay, and so therefore the utilities buy that energy from them and pass it on to the consumers. No, that would be fine.
Yeah.
Instead, they're becoming wealthy because governments around the world, especially the American government, are subsidizing what they're doing to the tune of billions and billions of dollars, even though one after another, those corporations keep going bankrupt. The people who get hurt instead are the folks who are hit by the higher energy prices that come when you add wind and solar into the feed for the electric grids, because on average it costs anywhere from about 4 to about 8 times as much per gigawatt hour of electricity generated to generate electricity from wind and solar as it does from coal and natural gas.
And obviously, you have people at every possible point in the spectrum of economic ability and people who want to start businesses.
Yeah.
And there are so many hurdles with government regulation, and then the basic cost of doing business are higher because of bad policies. And so while wealthy corporations can absorb these costs, it's significantly harming the ability of many folks to get somewhere in our economy.
Yeah, and that is a very, very important point to make, because a lot of folks will say, oh, it's just the major corporations, especially the big fossil fuel corporations, who oppose these policies. As a matter of fact, the big fossil fuel corporations have done very, very little to try to oppose these policies. Mostly they've supported them. And the reason is what you just mentioned. Already large, very profitable corporations can afford the adjustments in how they do business that come about because of new regulations put
right.
forward by whether it's the EPA or Department of Interior or whatever. They can afford to do that. But small corporations or new startups can't afford to do that. So the big corporations favor these new regulations because they actually protect them from competition. That's exactly the opposite of what consumers need. Consumers need more and more competition among corporations because that's what drives prices down.
Right, exactly. You write in your open letter to the Pope, by the way, it seems like the Pope did not read your letter very carefully.
Well, you know, I do have very good information from inside sources that the letter at least got to him. I know of one major Catholic intellectual here in America who has a very direct line to the Pope and who sent it to him with a very strong recommendation attached to it. I also know that it came to the attention of Cardinal Gerhard Müller, who is the head of the Sacred Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, what used to be called the Inquisition. And I know that it was brought to his attention by several different people. And those things are probably what led to a postponement of the release of the encyclical. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the encyclical, which was bad enough as is, would have been even worse had it not been for our letter, because the word that we have from inside the Vatican is that it was postponed because it was recognized that in the form that it was at that point, it wouldn't have gotten through the Sacred Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith.
Well, you were a delegate, right, of the Heartland group that went to...
Yeah, I'm not sure that delegate is, you know, delegate implies that somebody sent you.
Yeah.
You know, I went because I represent the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. Heartland arranged the press conference and then the following day the symposium of lectures in which I participated, and we're grateful for that. They're good friends of ours.
Yeah, that's super. Well, in your open letter, signed now by 200 scholars, climate scientists, theologians, you indicate that the empirical evidence, not the theories or the models, but the empirical evidence suggests that fossil fuel will not cause catastrophic warming. Could you touch on that?
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. According to the models, we ought to be seeing about 0.3 of a degree of warming every decade. Now, you know, it may be a little bit more, a little bit less in different decades, but it would average out to that throughout the 21st century, driven by added CO2 in the atmosphere, which gets there when we burn fossil fuels. That's what the models say. But the actual observations now, stretching back to the late 1970s, the beginning of what we call the satellite period, because that's when we have the very best data on global average temperature, which come from satellites. And by the way, the scientist with NASA who is in charge of that program is a senior fellow with the Cornwall Alliance. Over this period now that runs 36 years, there has been less than 1/3 of that amount of warming. Now, we can't even know that all of that warming, the less than a third, was driven by increased CO2 in the atmosphere. And the reason we can't know that is that there have been similar periods of warming, two other periods since 1850, and many more periods like that in the more distant past. So, you know, the best we can say is that added CO2 is causing a small fraction of a degree of warming every, you know, century or so.
We're speaking with Calvin Beissner of Cornwall Alliance. Calvin, we had an ice age where much of the continents in the northern hemisphere were covered with 100 feet or more of ice. We had the mini ice age, and the Earth warmed after those periods. We have global warming on Mars, of all things, where it can't be attributed to SUVs because I think there's only two of them up there that NASA sent.
Right, so we put them there.
Yeah, if the sun...
And they didn't run on fossil fuels.
No, right. So if the sun produces the tiniest bit more energy. It's astoundingly stable. Thank God that it is. But if it produces the tiniest bit of additional energy output, our climate is going to register that. And there yes. was warming periods before the Industrial Revolution.
Yes. And the alarmists about so-called man-made global warming will say, well, look, you know, the fluctuation in solar radiance, that is light coming from the sun, the fluctuation in that is too small to account for the rapidity of the warming that we observed basically from about the mid-1970s to the late 1990s. And remember, there has been no significant, statistically significant global warming for the last 17 to 27 years, probably 18 and a half. But they'll say, okay, the solar irradiance fluctuation is too small to account for that. What they're neglecting is that there's another thing that fluctuates about the sun, and that is the output of solar magnetic wind. And solar magnetic wind has an impact on another natural phenomenon, that is the influx of cosmic rays from outer space. And as these cosmic rays come into the Earth's atmosphere, they interact with molecules in the atmosphere to form cloud nuclei, the nuclei on which water vapor condenses to form clouds.
Yeah,
well, clouds, in turn, help to control temperature on the Earth. And it turns out that there's a very strong positive correlation between cosmic ray influx and global average temperature, whereas the correlation between carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere and global temperature is a very weak concentration. The CO2 keeps on going up very steadily, but the temperature doesn't.
And when it gets warmer, clouds, the tops of clouds, sunlight coming down on the Earth is reflected back into space.
That's
because
right.
of their albedo. So it's a bit warmer, and you have more evaporation from the oceans.
Yeah.
And therefore, the Earth absorbs less of the sun's energy. The system that was designed, the fine-tuning of the Earth, Moon, Sun, Solar system, it's just yes. astounding. You mentioned Richard Feynman. He wrote one of our favorite books here, QED, Quantum Electrodynamics. And he talks about the apparent fine-tuning and the Earth's amazing place in the universe. And
yes.
wouldn't it be embarrassing to us, he said, if it turns out that there was something to all that.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, that's rather funny.
These, he is amazing.
These natural scientists will talk about how rational they are, and then they'll say, look, the evidence all points toward God, but we can't go there.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, what you raised about this fine-tuning is a great illustration of what goes on in terms of our atmospheric chemistry and so on. You know, the fears of dangerous man-made warming are based on the idea that a tiny, tiny change in atmospheric chemistry, taking CO2 from 28 thousandths of a percent to today 40 thousandths of a percent of the atmosphere, would throw the whole climate system into catastrophic chaos. That really assumes that the climate system is extremely fragile. How does that comport with the biblical notion that an infinitely wise God designed the climate system, an infinitely powerful God created it, and an infinitely faithful God sustains it? You know, it's kind of like saying, look, this architect designed this building so that if you lean on that wall, all of the various different feedback mechanisms in the structure of the building are going to multiply the stress of your weight till the building collapses. Would we call that architect brilliant? No, I think we'd call him a fool. That's what we imply when we talk about the climate system being so fragile. That's what we imply about God, is that he was rather foolish. The wonderful thing is that empirical studies have shown the exact opposite, that clouds, instead of responding to a little bit of warming at the surface by increasing that warming, they actually respond to surface warming by decreasing that warming.
And
that's exactly the opposite of what the computer models have been designed to predict.
And Calvin Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance, consistent with what you just shared, we have Moses, who wrote in the book of Genesis, chapter 8, quoting God, that as long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. So we have a specific promise from the Lord.
We do, and it's very helpful to even think a little more deeply about how that verse works. That's a poetic structure called merism. And in merism, you will list opposite ends of some spectrum in order to say, you know, yeah, these and everything in between. Well, here we have four merisms in a row: seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night. The idea here is that God is saying, all the cycles on which life depends on Earth, I have committed that these will continue as long as the Earth itself endures. So we have God's promise that he's going to sustain the climate system. It doesn't mean that no changes will happen, but they will remain within a spectrum that allows life to continue to thrive on Earth instead of, you know, going off into catastrophic warming, threatening the survival of life, or at least the survival of the human race, as some alarmists like Al Gore will claim.
Well, your letter to Pope Francis really focused on this very substantive observation that humanity alone bears the image of God, and any effort to protect the environment must put at its center human well-being, and then, of course, in particular, the well-being of the poor, because they're more vulnerable, and we, if we love our neighbor, we're going to be concerned. Yet there are scientists who are secular in their worldview, and they, like our late-term abortionist right up the street from Real Science Radio studio in Boulder, Colorado, that's Warren Hearn, they believe that humanity is a scourge on the planet, like a cancer, like a tumor, and their attitudes, you write to the Pope, contaminate their assessment of man's effect on nature. They think it could only be negative.
Yeah, that's correct. And what's really tragic about this is that the three men who had the most influence on the drafting of this encyclical are UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and United Nations Millennium Development Goals guru, so to speak, Jeffrey Sachs, who's an economist from Columbia University. A climate scientist, a German climate scientist by the name of Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber. And all three of those men are atheists. Schellenhuber also combines some pantheism with his atheism. All three of those men believe that the world is already significantly overpopulated and that we need to reduce human population and that we need to do that through government-run programs of family planning that include sterilization, even forced sterilization, contraception, and abortion, including forced abortion. Schellenhuber, in fact, thinks that even with the advanced industrialized economies that we have now, the world can only support at most 1 billion people. But he also thinks that those advanced industrialized economies are destroying the environment, and so we need to get rid of those, and we really need to go back to 500 million people as maximum human population.
You've
got to eliminate 95% of us.
The scare regarding overpopulation has gone back through the centuries, even through the millennia, and we've done a recent show on that, explaining the hype and the reality.
Shocking, though, is that the Pope would take advice from these men when their basic worldview is so contrary to the basic Christian worldview, and their teachings on contraception and abortion are so opposite those of the Catholic Church.
Well, you mentioned the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, and what I know about that group, it's a very comfortable place for atheists and for those who hate Christ, and it's drenched in secular origins. They would never look at a passage in Scripture and draw any relevancy from it. They simply wouldn't.
That's right, and yet Psalm 1:1 tells us right at the start, blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly.
Wow.
And it's hard to think of more ungodly people than Ban Ki-moon, Jeffrey Sachs, and Hans-Joachim Schellenhuber when it comes to questions like this.
Calvin Beisner with the Cornwall Alliance, could we hit on just real quickly a couple of the global warming scandals? Like, for example, the hockey stick data. That really moved the whole world. And it turns out that the data for that famous hockey stick graph showing alarming global warming, the data behind the chart is missing.
Yeah, well, missing, fudged, tweaked,
unavailable.
All sorts of problems, improperly handled. The hockey stick graph, famous graph, was used 6 times in the 2001 third assessment report of the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Wow.
And it was used in the summary for policymakers that they put out. It was used all, you know, reprinted all over the world. And that really makes it look like, hey, we had pretty much stable temperature around the world for the last couple thousand years. And then all of a sudden it shot up like crazy, starting in the late 19th century and even more in the late 20th century. What turned out to be the problem is, first, the data from that came from select variety of trees in a couple of locations that are highly susceptible to increased rate of growth just simply from added CO2 in the atmosphere without reference to anything about temperature. And in fact, the scientists who did the study on those trees had specifically said the tree rings from these trees should not be used as a proxy for temperature. So, you know, on the one hand, they used bad data, data that was unsuitable to the purpose. But on the other hand, they used wrong statistical methodology, a statistical methodology called principal components analysis. And once professional statisticians looked at it, they said, oh, Mann and his colleagues completely misused this. They used it in a way that you can feed totally random numbers into it, and it'll still come out with a hockey stick. So when you corrected the statistical methodology and you brought in trees that were not subject to the problems that I've described already, all of a sudden the hockey stick just completely disappears. And
so it's
the
a
hockey
case
stick
of,
graph did disappear from the next UNIPCC report, but they didn't apologize for it.
So we have Al Gore losing one of his favorite scare tactics, the hockey stick graph, but then there's another scandal. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, from our You Can't Make This Stuff Up file here at Real Science Radio, we have the U.S. government's own historical temperature data through the 1900s, where this data, this database is the envy of much of the world because of how comprehensive it was. Yet it did not show global warming. So NOAA has been systematically changing the historical data so that their database will be more supportive to climate alarmists.
Yeah, this is a widespread practice, as a matter of fact, among climate scientists around the world who are sold out to global warming alarmism. And what it really is exactly the opposite of what science is supposed to be about. You see, they have a theory that tells them that rising CO2 in the atmosphere should be causing a certain amount of warming. They don't see that warming in the raw data gathered from temperature monitoring stations around the world. So what they do is they figure, oh, well, there must be something wrong with the data. So they change the more recent readings to higher, and they change the older readings to lower, and the result is the appearance of more rapid and greater magnitude warming over the period than was actually measured. The problem with that, of course, is it's, you know, logicians would call it circular reasoning. You have assumed the truth of your theory in order to support your premises, but the data are supposed to be the premises. And the data should drive the conclusions rather than the conclusions driving the data. So it's absolutely unscientific. It is terribly unethical, and it's going to turn into, I believe, within the next decade or two, certainly by the end of this century, it will be looked at as one of the greatest scandals in the whole history of science.
Wow. There is the hysterical warming list on the internet. Whenever something changes or something bad happens, it's attributed to global warming. They're now up to 883 effects from global warming, like, for example, fish that are smaller and fish that are bigger. They attribute everything to global warming. That's pretty funny. But then how about the email scandal from ostensibly the world's leading experts on global warming at the IPCC?
Yeah, you're referring to what is often called ClimateGate, which was the release in November of 2009 of about 3,000, if I remember correctly, emails among a group of about 18 or so leading scientists with the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change around the world, many of them at the University of East Anglia in Great Britain, the home of what's called the Climatic Research Unit. Those emails very clearly showed, and these were among these scientists, and they were talking about these things with each other, these emails clearly showed that these scientists were, shall we say, fabricating data, exaggerating data, suppressing data that didn't go along with their conclusions, intimidating scientists who were getting different results, trying to keep them from getting their studies published. They were corrupting the peer review process. They intimidated editors at science journals to get them not to publish papers that disagreed with them, all sorts of things. And then 2 years later, by the way, another 10,000-some emails, and in both instances, a whole bunch of computer code, were also released, showing more of the same just horrendously unethical behavior on the part of these scientists. So this just shows the extent to which these people were willing to use very dishonest methods to further their notion that the human use of fossil fuels was causing great damage to the planet. What it really serves is a political agenda. A former professor of climate change at the University of East Anglia is Mike Hulme. And in his book, Why We Disagree About Climate Change, Hulme wrote that the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is what he called a post-normal science activity. Now, post-normal science is basically science put at the service of political agendas. You determine your agenda first.
Yeah.
Then you go through the motions of science to provide a scientific rationale for pursuing that agenda. And Hulme said, look, in a world that's dominated by capitalism, climate change or global warming is a handy thing to come along. We can use it to provide a rationale for our political agenda, for our policies. And Hulme, by the way, is a socialist. So he wants to replace capitalism, free trade around the world,
right,
with socialism as the global economic order. And he and others want to use this whole process as a means of redistributing wealth from the industrialized countries to the developing countries.
Yeah, co-opting science and alarmism from science. It fits right in with a really interesting talk given by Michael Crichton a while ago. The Earth. The Earth is an ice maker extraordinaire. It does a great job at making ice. There have been predictions, we've been following them over the years, that Arctic ice is going to be gone and you end up with 500,000 square miles more Arctic ice than the previous year or two. Antarctica, you've got a vessel of researchers go down to Antarctica to study global warming. They get stuck in the ice. It's life threatening. Again, it's from the file, you can't make this stuff up. The predictions that have been made by Al Gore and so many others that we're just not going to see it snow anymore. You're not going to make snowballs. You can't go skiing. Even the more short-term predictions have been completely falsified.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, one British scientist said back in around, I think it was about 2005, said, British children are not going to know what snow is. A couple of years later, for the first time in a long, long time, over a century, I think it was, the entire island of Great Britain was covered with snow. And that has now happened several more times since then.
Yeah. So they finessed it to climate change so they don't embarrassed with the global warming term.
Right. And now they say that global warming causes colder winters in some places and warmer winters in other places. It causes more heat and less heat. It causes, you know, more ice and less ice and so on.
I mean, right.
It has become an unfalsifiable hypothesis.
Yeah, it causes big fish and small fish.
It's
just so funny. It's all of it. It's just you can't make this stuff up. So
we have a number of, if I can mention this, we have a number of really excellent papers, scholarly papers, as well as short articles about this whole subject at cornwallalliance.org. So your listeners can follow up on this. Obviously, we can't cover it all in a brief radio program.
We'll link to your beautiful website. I've gone through your landmark documents. Just tremendous. Maybe we could end with a couple of the observations. I mentioned Michael Crichton, and he spoke about the scientific alarmism. And it's reminding people about Paul Ehrlich, the population bomb, who said that the battle to feed humanity is over. And he predicted in the 1970s, the world will undergo famines where hundreds of millions of people will starve to death. And that in the 1980s, 65 million Americans will starve to death. In an interview just a few months ago, he was asked about those predictions and if he would dial them back today. And he said, no, I would still have said the exact same thing. So their worldview and reality are completely divorced.
Yeah, I mean, Ehrlich's actual scientific expertise is butterfly biology. If I remember correctly, he did his PhD dissertation on the mating habits of a particular butterfly in Japan, I think, even. He certainly was not an expert on the economics of population, demography, or the economics of resource use or anything else. And the amazing thing is that when Ehrlich made those predictions in 1968, he said, these things, these famines were going to happen no matter what we do. It is not possible to prevent them. Well, the famines didn't occur. Instead, population continued to grow and people got more food than ever before. Mm. Hunger became less common than before. And in fact, over the last, well, from 1990 to 2012, the percentage of the human race living in abject poverty on the equivalent of less than $1.25 a day has fallen from about half, about 50% of the humans living that way, to now slightly under 20%. It's the most rapid deliverance of people from poverty in all of history.
And thank God for that.
This is exactly the opposite of their predictions.
So we are out of time, unfortunately. But Calvin Beisner, what an honor to have you on this program. You and I met just a couple weeks ago at the Western Conservative Summit. In fact,
yes,
our
did.
Exhibits were, we were neighbors. And so it was really a great time to meet you and get to know you. Thank you for your work, Calvin.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be on the program, and I've enjoyed it.
So that's Calvin Beisner with the Cornwall Alliance. Our website, Real Science Radio, realscienceradio.com, or rsr.org. We will link to Calvin's website to make it super easy, cornwallalliance.org. Also, it's just so crucial to help us stay on the air. We don't have a large foundation behind us. We don't have any foundation behind us. We don't have a mega church. I pastor Denver Bible Church. We need your help. With God and your help, we will be able to stay on the air to reach more, Lord willing, thousands of people with the truth that He is our Creator, our Savior, and our Lord. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, this is Bob Benyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.